Pilgrim's Progress in an updated, more modern English, the fourth stage. Then Christian headed out. But discretion, piety, charity, and prudence decided they would go with him to the foot of the hill. So they walked on together, while reiterating their former discussions on their way to the bottom of the hill. Christian said, "While it was difficult coming up the hill, so far as I can see, it is even more dangerous going down." "Yes," Prudence agreed, "so it is. For it is a hard manner for a man to go down into the valley of humiliation, as you are doing now, without slipping along the way. It is for this reason that we decided to accompany you down the hill." So they continued together down the hill, and though Christian walked very carefully, he still slipped a time or two. "Then I saw in my dream that when Christian and his good companions reached the bottom of the hill, his companions gave him a loaf of bread, a bottle of wine, and a cluster of raisins, and said farewell to him, and he went on his way. While Christian was among his godly friends, their precious words offered plenty of amends for all of his grief. And when they let him go, he was clad with northern steel from top to toe. But it didn't take long for Christian to be hard-pressed in this valley of humiliation. He had only gone a little way before he spotted a foul Finn coming across the field to meet him. The Finn's name was Apollyon, which means destroyer. Fear filled Christian, his mind raced trying to figure out what to do. Should he go back or stand his ground? As he considered his options, he thought about retreating, but he had no armor for his back. If he ran away and turned his back to the Fend, it might give his foe a greater advantage, making it easier to pierce him with his darts. So Christian determined to stand his ground and risk confrontation with the enemy. He was out of time, and it was the best thing to do. So he continued on, and Apollyon met him. The monster was hideous and clothed with scales like a fish. They were his pride. He also had wings like a dragon, feet like a bear, and out of his belly spewed fire and smoke, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. When he came up to Christian, he eyed him with disdain and began to question him. The Fend asked, "Where did you come from, and where are you going?" Christian swallowed his fear and said, "I have come from the city of destruction, which is the place of all evil, and I'm going to the city of Zion." "From destruction, you say? Then that means you are one of my subjects, for all that country is mine. You see, I am its prince and God." Apollyon's eyes narrowed. "So how is it then that you have run away from your king? If it wasn't for my plans for you to serve me more, I would strike you to the ground with one smashing blow right now for such an act." Christian stood his ground. "I was indeed born in your dominion, but your service was hard, and your wages such as a man cannot live on, for the wages of sin is death. So when I reached adulthood, I did what thoughtful people do. I looked for a way that I might perhaps improve myself." Apollyon looked down on Christian with eyes hooded with pride. "No prince worthy of his title releases his subjects easily, and I am no different. I'm not ready to let you loose yet. But since you have complained about your service and wages, let me encourage you to go back home. I personally promise that what our country can afford, I will give you." Christian shook his head. "I can't do that. You see, I've already yielded myself to another, even to the King of Princes. How can I, in all fairness, go back with you?" One side of Apollyon's thin upper lip curled. "You have done exactly as the proverb says, exchanged a bad for a worse. However, it is quite common for those who have professed themselves to be his servants to give him the slip after a while and return to me. Do this, and I promise all will be well." Christian stood his ground. "I have given him my faith and sworn my allegiance to him. How can I possibly go back on my word and not be hanged as a traitor?" "Think about it. you did the same to me, and yet I am willing to forget about it. If you will turn again and go back to destruction. Apollyon responded. Krishan raised his palm toward the fiend. No, what I promised to you happened when I was but an immature youth. Besides that, I regard the prince under whose banner I now stand to be the one able to absolve me of your charges. He let his hand drop and looked Apollyon directly in the eye. And yes, he is also able to pardon the things I did in service to you. Besides that, O destroying Apollyon, to tell you the truth, I like his service, his wages, his servants, his government, his company and country better than yours. So stop trying to change my mind. I am the Lord's servant, and I have made up my mind to follow him. A wisp of smoke curled from Apollyon's nostrils. That's all well and good, but think of what it will be like when your spirits are low, and you have so much to get done. He paused dramatically and raised a bony-looking ridge above his right eye. You are aware that, for the most part, his servants come to a wretched end because they are transgressors against me and my ways. How many of them have been shamefully put to death? And you consider his service better than mine, even though he has never come from that heavenly place where he is to rescue any of his servants out of their enemies' hands? On the other hand, the world knows I am nothing like that. Look at how many times I've delivered those who faithfully served me, either by my power or by the use of fraudulent schemes, even when they were taken by him and his followers. And so will I rescue you in the same way, Krishan. You don't understand, Krishan said. His present restraint in delivering them is deliberate and with purpose. It is to test their love and prove whether they will be loyal to him to the end. And as for the shameful end you say is their destiny, that isn't an end, for they are assured of receiving future glory. In fact, they don't expect deliverance now. Instead, they are content to wait for their future glory, and they will have it when their prince comes in his glory along with the angels. Apollyon jabbed his pointed finger in Krishan's direction. You have already been unfaithful in your service to him. So how is it that you think you are going to receive wages from him? Tell me, Apollyon, in what ways have I been unfaithful to him? Very soon after setting out from destruction, you were quickly discouraged. When you were almost choked in a slough of despond, he raised his bony finger to track just how unfaithful the pilgrim had been. You also made several wrong attempts to be rid of your burden when you should have waited until your prince had taken it off. He ticked off his point on a second finger. Plus, you sinfully overslept. You lost your precious possession, and you almost turned back at the sight of the lions. He ran out of fingers on which to count Krishan's missteps and dramatically threw his hand in the air with a flare to make his point of just how unfaithful Krishan had been. And when you talk about your journey and of what you have seen and heard, inwardly you desire personal praise for all you say and do. Krishan glanced at the ground. All this is true. In fact, there is much more that you have left out. He looked back at Apollyon. But the prince whom I serve and honor is merciful and ready to forgive. But besides these wrongdoings which I committed in your country, where I was brought up and educated in them, I have grown under and repented of them. As a result, I have received a full pardon from my prince regarding these crimes. Apollyon broke into a furious rage, saying, I am an enemy to this prince. I hate his person, his laws, and his people. He spit the words as if they left a bad taste in his mouth. I have come out here to purposely oppose you. Krishan did not back away. He said, Apollyon, be careful of what you are doing, for I am on the king's highway, the way of holiness. So watch yourself. Apollyon defiantly straddled the entire width of the way, blocking Krishan's way. I am not afraid in this, the fiend hissed. Prepare to die, for I swear by my infernal den that you will go no further, for here I will spill your soul. Without warning, he hurled a flaming dart at Krishan's breast, but Krishan lifted the shield in his hand and deflected it, and so avoided the danger. Christian drew his sword, for he saw it was time to rouse himself to action. Apollyon quickly responded by throwing darts as thick as hail, and even with all the skill he could muster, Christian could not deflect them all. Apollyon inflicted wounds to his head, his hand, and foot. Christian retreated a little, and Apollyon pressed more forcefully. Yet Christian took courage and resisted as fearlessly as he could. This agonizing combat lasted for more than half of a day, until Christian was almost exhausted. For you should know that because of Christian's wounds, he inevitably grew weaker and weaker. Then Apollyon spotted his opportunity. He began to press closer to Christian, wrestled with him, and threw him hard to the ground. Christian's sword flew out of his hand. Apollyon's teeth showed in a sneer. "I am sure of you now." The Finn drew closer, intending to inflict a mortal wound. Christian began to despair for his life, but, as God would have it, while Apollyon prepared to make his final blow to destroy this good man, Christian nimbly reached out his hand and gripped his sword, and he cried out, "Do not rejoice over me, O my enemy. Though I fall, I will arise." Micah 7, verse 8. With that, Christian gave Apollyon a deadly thrust. The Finn drew back like someone who had received a fatal wound. Christian recognized the opportunity and moved in on him again, saying, "But in all these things we are overwhelmingly conquerors through him who loved us." Apollyon spread his ragged wings and quickly took to the air and flew away until Christian no longer saw him. Submit therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you, James 4, verse 7. Now, unless you had seen and heard the intensity of this combat, like I did, you can't imagine the yelling and hideous roaring Apollyon made throughout the fight. Along with that, he spoke like a dragon, and on the other side of the fight, sighs and groans burst from Christian's heart. I'd never seen him give so much as one pleasant look throughout the hellish fight, until he knew he had wounded Apollyon with his two-edged sword. Then a smile brightened his face, and he looked up. But it was the battle itself that was the most dreadful sight I ever saw. So when the battle was over, Christian declared, "I will give thanks right here and now to him who has delivered me out of the mouth of the lion, that is Apollyon." He followed this with words of gratitude, saying, "Great Beelzebub, the captain of this fen made plans for my ruin, and with this in mind he sent out Apollyon fully equipped and in a rage. And the hellish fen fiercely engaged me, but blessed Michael helped me, and by the blow of my sword I quickly made him fly. Therefore to him let me give lasting praise and thanks, and bless his holy name always." Then a hand appeared to Christian offering some leaves from the tree of life. He accepted them and applied the leaves to the wounds he had received in the battle. His wounds healed immediately. Christian took time to sit down in that place to eat bread and drink from the bottle which had been given to him for refreshment. Once finished, he headed out to continue his journey with the sword drawn in his hand. He said, "Who knows if there might be some other enemy at hand?" But the remainder of his journey through this valley remained quiet, and he experienced no more trouble from Apollyon. Now at the end of this valley stretched another called the Valley of the Shadow of Death. It was necessary for Christian to go through it, because the way to the celestial city lay in that direction. Now this valley was a very solitary place. The prophet Jeremiah describes it like this: a wilderness, a land of deserts and pits, a land of drought and a shadow of death, a land that no man, but a Christian, passeth through, and where no man dwells, Jeremiah 2, verse 6. Now here Christian was tested more severely than in his fight with Apollyon, as you shall see in the following account. "I saw then in my dream that when Christian reached the borders of the shadow of death, he met two men. They were children of the spies who had delivered an evil report about the good land, and who quickly determined to go back. Christian spoke to the two men, asking, 'Where are you going?' The two said, 'Back. We're definitely going back. And truthfully, we would have you do the same if you value life or peace.' 'Why?' Christian looked out at the valley. 'What's the matter with the way ahead?' 'Matter? the two said together. We were going that way just as you are and went as far as we dared. In fact, if we had gone on a little further, we wouldn't be here to bring you the news. But what did you encounter? Christian wanted to know. The men looked at each other and back at Christian. Why, we were almost in the valley of the shadow of death, but by good fortune we looked ahead of us and saw the danger before we came to it. Furrows of frustration gathered between Christian's brows. What? What did you see? See? Why, the valley itself. They leaned close and almost whispered. It's dark as pitch, and we also saw hobgoblins, satyrs, and dragons of the pit. They stood a little straighter and looked over to their shoulders. We also heard things in that valley like a continual howling and yelling, sounds of a people in misery too great for words, people bound in affliction and irons. Besides all that, discouraging clouds of confusion hung over that valley, while death spread its wings and hovered over it. In a word, it was a completely dreadful sight, being surrounded with nothing but disorder. The land in utter gloom is darkness itself, of deep shadow without order, and which shines as a darkness, Job 10, verse 22. Christian slowly exhaled. While I haven't seen what you describe, it doesn't change the fact that this is my way to the desired haven. The two men shrugged. If it is still your way, be that as it may, but we will not choose it for ours. So they parted ways, and Christian went on his way, with the sword still drawn and ready in his hand for fear he might be assaulted. Then I saw in my dream an overview of the valley. As far as it reached on the right was a very deep ditch. It is this ditch into which the blind have led the blind throughout time and have both perished miserably. On the left there was a very dangerous bottomless quagmire. If a man should fall into it, even a good man, there is no bottom for his foot to stand on. King David once fell into that quagmire and would no doubt have been smothered if it wasn't for he who was able to pluck him out. Walking in the dark, Christian was careful to avoid the ditch on the one hand, but the way was so narrow it put him at risk of tipping the other way into the mire on the left. In the same way, if he tried to avoid the mire without great caution, he found himself on the brink of falling into the ditch. In this way he went on. The effort brought one sigh after another, for besides the dangers of the ditch and the quagmire, the pathway was so dark that he often couldn't see where his next step would land. Now, in about the middle of this valley, I observed the mouth of hell. It stood hard against a narrow way. When Christian saw it, he wondered what he should do because of the flames of smoke that poured from it, not to mention the sparks and hideous noises. These things had no respect for Christian's sword, such as Apollyon had shown. He was forced to put up his sword and to take another weapon called all prayer. Christian cried out in my hearing, saying, O Lord, I beg you to deliver my soul. So Christian went on like this a long time as he continued on the way, yet the flame still reached towards him while doleful voices continued their unsettling calls and hushed back and forth to the point that he sometimes thought he would be torn in pieces or tramped upon like mire in the streets. He made slow progress over several miles surrounded by these frightful sights and dreadful noises. He finally reached a place where he thought he heard a group of Finns approaching to meet him. He stopped. His thoughts raced as he tried to figure out the best thing to do. He played with the idea of turning back, but then again he thought he might be halfway through the valley by now. He remembered how he had already overcome many perils, and that the dangers of going back might be much more than those going forward. So he made up his mind to go on, yet the fence seemed to draw nearer and nearer to his location. When it seemed they were almost on him, he cried out with a most fervent voice, I will walk in the strength of the Lord God. With that, the Finns drew back and came no further. One thing I shouldn't forget to mention is how poor Christian looked so confused. As I watched him, it was like he didn't even know his own voice. Just when he came to the mouth of the burning pit, one of the wicked ones sneaked up behind him. It whispered softly into his ear with many suggestive and distressing blasphemies. Christian thought these blasphemies had originated in his own mind, and it troubled him deeply. As he continued on his journey, the thought that he could possibly blaspheme the one who loved him so much weighed heavily on him. In fact, it tested Christian more than anything he had met with before. If he could have helped it, he would not have done it, but he didn't have the foresight to either stop his ears or to understand the real source of these blasphemies. When Christian had traveled in this depressed condition for a significant amount of time, he thought he heard the voice of a man on the way ahead of him saying, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me." As a result, gladness filled Christian's heart for these reasons. First, because he gathered from what he heard that others who feared God were in the valley along with him. Secondly, since he understood that God was with them, even in such a dark and dismal place, he reasoned that his invisible presence was with him in spite of the hindrances of such a place. Thirdly, he hoped to catch up and enjoy some fellowship with the man ahead, and thought about calling to him, though he didn't know what to say, for he had also thought himself to be alone. Finally, the light of morning dawned, and Christian said, "He has turned the shadow of death into morning." Now, in light of the new day, he looked back, not because he wanted to go back the way he had come, but to see the ditch perfectly on the one side and the quagmire on the other, along with just how narrow the way was which lay between them. He could also see the hobgoblins, satyrs, and dragons of the pit, but they kept their distance. Apparently, after the break of day, they were reluctant to come near, yet he saw them in fulfillment of that which is written. He reveals mysteries from the darkness and brings the deep darkness into light. Job 12, verse 22. Christian was greatly encouraged that he had made it through all the dangers of a solitary journey so far. He could now see these dangers, though he feared them more than ever, because the light of day exposed them. So the rising sun offered even more mercy to Christian, because it is important to note that though the first part of the valley of the shadow of death was dangerous, this second part which stretched ahead of him was, if possible, far more dangerous. From the place where he currently stood, he could see that throughout the remainder of the valley the way was full of snares, traps, gins, and nets. Along with that, the depths were so full of pits, pitfalls, deep holes, and unsafe ledges, that if it had been dark now, like it was when he came to the first part of the way, even if he had 1,000 souls, they would all have been lost. But as I said, the sun was now rising. Then he said, "His lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness." Job 29, verse 3. Christian made it to the end of the valley, walking in the light. "Now I saw in my dream that at the end of the valley lay blood, bones, ashes, and mingled bodies of men, even of pilgrims who had gone this way earlier. While I pondered the possible reason for such remains, I spotted a little cave ahead of me where two giants, Pope and Pagan, lived in old times. It was by their power and tyranny that men whose bones, blood, ashes, and other remains lay in this place were cruelly put to death. But Christian passed by this place without much danger, and it somewhat surprised me. But I have learned that Pagan has been dead many a day. As for the other, though he is still alive, because of his old age and many shrewd conflicts from his younger days, he has grown so crazy and stiff in his joints that he can do little more than sit in his cave's mouth, grinning at pilgrims as they go by, biting his nails in frustration because he can no longer intercept them." So Christian went on his way, but he didn't know what to think of the old man sitting at the mouth of the cave, especially because Pope was unable to approach him, though he spoke to him, saying, "You will never mend till more of you are burned." But Christian held his peace and smiled as he went by and suffered no harm. Then he sang his song, "A world of wonders, I can say no less, that I should be preserved in that distress. I have met with here, oh blessed be, the hand that from it has delivered me. dangers and darkness, devils, hell, and sin did surround me while I this veil was in. Snares, pits, traps, and nets did lie about my path that worthless I might have been caught, entangled, and cast down. But since I live, let Jesus wear the crown.